Welcome to the HIV Australia podcast, a discussion about the community-led response to HIV. In this episode, we're talking to Dr. Skye McGregor, epidemiologist at the Kirby Institute, about late HIV diagnoses and undiagnosed HIV among people from a culturally and linguistically diverse background in Australia. Dr. McGregor, what exactly is meant by late diagnosis? So how is it defined? And what does it mean if you are diagnosed late?
Thanks for having me today, Tim. So I think to explain late HIV diagnosis, it's helpful to first understand the component of the immune system that HIV attacks, so CD4 plus T cells. So these cells are a type of white blood cell that are one essential part of the complex human immune system. So HIV attacks these cells and therefore prevents the body from mounting a comprehensive immune response. This leaves people susceptible to direct illness as a result of HIV, as well as being susceptible to other infections due to now having a compromised immune system. So we call these other infections opportunistic. The level of CD4 plus T cells in the blood is an indication of how advanced someone's HIV is. So the longer someone has had HIV, the greater the assault on their immune system and the lower their CD4 plus T cell count. So a late HIV diagnosis is defined as a person being diagnosed with HIV with a CD4 plus T cell count of 350 or less per cubic millimetre of blood. And for comparison, a normal CD4 count cell range is 500 to 1500.
So obviously it's really important, Dr. McGregor, to reduce the proportion of late diagnoses to make sure that people are nice and healthy no matter when they're diagnosed. Tell us a bit about that.
Absolutely. So if a person receives a timely HIV diagnosis, they can quickly commence life-saving treatment, which stops the virus replicating and allows the CD4 plus T cells to recover and therefore immune function to recover. Highly effective HIV treatments are available in Australia, and the Australian government is now funding subsidised access to all people living with HIV, regardless of their Medicare status, which is fantastic. And with effective treatment, people living with HIV experience a similar life expectancy to the rest of the population. It is important, however, to consider the role of stigma and discrimination in terms of quality of life for people living with HIV, regardless of their stage of diagnosis, and the role we all have to play in reducing this.
So, of course, it's better for individuals to get that diagnosis early to reduce the damage done to their health and their bodies. But it's also really good sort of for everyone else, if I can put it like that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, Tim, as you say, the timely diagnosis has significant individual level benefits, as we've just chatted about, but also population level benefits in terms of prevention. So HIV treatment that results in viral suppression, that is having an undetectable viral load, so the amount of HIV in the blood, means that the chance of passing HIV onto sexual partners is effectively reduced to zero. So the individual benefit is improved health and well-being, and at a population level, treatment prevents new HIV infections and is therefore called treatment as prevention.
This is a fascinating area, reducing the proportion of people who are diagnosed late, I can see now, is so important for a couple of reasons. Can you tell us a bit about the data in your research? What is it telling us about late HIV diagnoses in Australia, including for people from a culturally and linguistically diverse background?
Yeah, so Tim, the latest data we have, which are the 2020 data, show that 44% of new HIV diagnoses in Australia were classified as late diagnoses, which is an increase from 32% in 2016. If we look in more detail, the data show us that among people born overseas diagnosed with HIV in 2020, 52%, so more than half, were diagnosed late, compared to 37% among people born in Australia. And while country of birth is a poor proxy for cultural and linguistic diversity, as this indicator may incorrectly classify people or not capture all people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, it does indicate that people born overseas are missing out on timely HIV testing and diagnosis.
It's so interesting. I understand some of the other data you're looking at is useful in terms of understanding late diagnoses. Tell us a bit about how we make sure that we are getting those, I suppose, those testing facilities or that capacity to people who you're identifying as who might need a bit more help to sort of make sure they can get access to HIV testing?
Yes, I think a really important part of this is ensuring a range of HIV testing options are available for people, and that strategies are developed in consultation with the communities of most affected. So we're talking about ensuring that public health strategies are available in language, that they're co-designed so that they're acceptable and so people understand them. And I think this need is reflected in the recently launched Australian Multicultural Health Collaborative, which is coordinated by the Federation of Ethnic Communities Councils of Australia. And this collaborative aims to address health systems inequities and improve health outcomes for people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds in Australia.
What does the data tell us about undiagnosed HIV in Australia, including for people from a culturally and linguistically diverse background?
In terms of undiagnosed HIV, it's good to understand first where these data come from. So each year, mathematical modellers at the Kirby Institute produce estimates of the indicators in what we call the HIV diagnosis and care cascade. So the cascade provides information on the estimated number of people living with HIV, the number diagnosed in care, taking effective treatment and achieving viral suppression. So these estimates are used to track Australia's progress with national and international benchmarks. So the proportion undiagnosed, that is the number of people living with HIV but yet to be diagnosed, comes from these estimates and is important in understanding where the gaps are in testing and therefore the potential for late diagnoses. So in 2020, an estimated 2,610 people, or 9% of people living with HIV in Australia, were living with undiagnosed HIV. And while this proportion has decreased since 2016, when it was 12%, the change really has been slower than required to achieve national and international targets, which are 95% of people living with HIV diagnosed by 2030. And Tim, if we look at these data broken down by region of birth, we can see some disparity emerge. So in 2020, an estimated 28% of people born in Southeast Asia were living with undiagnosed HIV. And this compares to 22% of people born in Latin America and 13% of people born in sub-Saharan Africa. And just a reminder that the national estimate is 9%, so quite a substantial difference. And these data show that we need to do more to ensure access to HIV testing to reduce the proportion of living with undiagnosed HIV. It is also important to note that while the proportion of undiagnosed HIV is highest among people born in Southeast Asia, this proportion has declined over time. In comparison, among people born in Latin America, the proportion living with undiagnosed HIV has plateaued in the last few years. So if we come back to the earlier point, I think it's important that public health strategies ensure timely HIV diagnoses. And for example, this is through access to different HIV testing options, including self-testing. And they need to be co-designed with relevant communities to ensure that they're both appropriate and acceptable.
Oh, it's fascinating stuff. And you can see how we're closing in on some of those groups that, you know, we really need to be getting in contact with so that we can really scotch this virus, once and for all. Look, just finally, before we let you go, you've touched on some of the limitations in the identifiers of cultural and linguistic diversity in data. Could you talk about that briefly?
Yeah, so Tim, we know from the most recent census data released by the Australian Bureau of Statistics just this week that almost half of Australians had a parent born overseas and more than a quarter were themselves born overseas. So we're clearly a country of migrants. However, to date, we haven't reported public health data very well in respect to cultural and linguistic diversity. Often country of birth is the only indicator available or the only one reported, but realistically, country of birth doesn't provide very much detail. Someone may have been born in Australia, but have close cultural ties to their parents' country of birth and speak a language other than English at home. And these people are missed out in the classification of cultural and linguistic diversity using country of birth alone. On the other side, country of birth may group some people as culturally and linguistically diverse, but they're probably not really. They may come from an English-speaking country with a similar cultural context to Australia. And I think it's clear that more nuanced analyses using additional data fields to improve identification of people from cultural and linguistic diverse backgrounds are needed. And for example, this might be things like language spoken at home, year of arrival in Australia, country of birth of parents. And this will contribute to ongoing discussions around health equity for this priority population. And at the same time, efforts are ongoing to improve national HIV data collection to provide more granular data to inform appropriate and equitable public health responses in Australia in this space.
Well, Dr. Skye McGregor, epidemiologist at the Kirby Institute, thank you so much for giving us shining a light on this area and on your research. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for your time today.
This is a podcast for HIV Australia. We're discussing in this series the community-led response to HIV. We'll talk to you next time.